You're listening to the Fat Dude Digs Flicks Movie Podcast Network. And now, the Criterion Break. Greetings and salutations, everyone, and welcome to a bonus episode of the Criterion Break. I am one third of your host trifecta, Andy, the resident fat dude of Fat Dude Digs Flicks, and I am joined, as always, by my partners in crime, Mr. Blake Ginnethan. Blake, how you doing?
Hello.
And Mr. Derek Vierick. Derek, how are you, buddy?
Hello. I'm just going to get this out of the way, since this is an Oscar episode. Tonight, I am wearing Nike sweatpants and a canvas t-shirt, for those of you red carpet followers. So there you go.
Interesting.
We have all dressed well. I don't think I have one. Oh, I've got Hanes socks on. So that would be the name brand that I am wearing this evening. If this is your first time listening to the Criterion Break, what an interesting episode you have chosen to start with. The Criterion Break typically is a where three friends dive into our love of the Criterion Collection proper and the Criterion Channel. But we're gonna scrap all that for this episode, because not only are we Criterion fans, we are also just big time movie fans who also like award season to an extent. We like award season, and this year has been a really exciting year for movies in general, and it's that time of the year where people get rewarded for it. So I figured we'd kind of take a little Criterion break and talk about the 2023 Oscars. So I guess before we kind of get started with our specific conversation, I just kind of want to talk about the Oscars in general, and maybe like your guys's reaction to, even, I mean, not necessarily just this ceremony, but Oscars in general. Derek, are you like a lifelong fan of the Oscars? Do you remember like where your appreciation for award season began?
Yeah, the very first Oscar ceremony that I remember watching was in 1994. So this would be for the 93 Oscars, when Schindler's List was the big winner of the night, along with Jurassic Park. It was a Spielberg night overall. Yeah. So I very distinctly remember watching that. I also very distinctly remember watching the following year's Oscars, the 95 Oscars, specifically because that was the infamous David Letterman Oscars, and I was a big Letterman Late Show fan at the time, and just seeing him get to screw around on the stage and do stupid stuff like his Cabin Boy auditions reel and Uma Oprah and all that stuff, that appealed to me. Watching the Oscars is a tradition. Obviously, as time has gone on, I've gotten more and more into like the Guild stuff. I'm very vocally not a fan of the Golden Globes. We'll get into that topic as we discuss some of the nominees here tonight. But in terms of, you know, the awards season as a whole, I'm very much enthused by it. As long as awards season doesn't go on terribly long, we're going to push it all the way to the end of March. That can be a little bit tiring, because there's only so long that you can talk about the same set of movies all over. Yeah. And, you know, we're getting to like a March 12th Oscar date, which isn't terrible. Mm-hmm. I'm still very much enthused by it, you know, with 1 week to go as of the time we're recording this. So, yeah, I'm very excited. And like you mentioned, this year overall has been a very strong crop of films. I thought last year was pretty strong too, as we're kind of sifting out, you know, or getting back on our feet from the pandemic. That was a decent crop. And I would almost say this is an even better crop, if I were to say so myself, but that's just me.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I think, even where we stand on, like, and we will of course dive into this as we go along, but even where we stand on predictability and favorites and things like that, I would still say that the general, like, pool of Oscar movies is pretty exciting because there's some really good stuff kind of in the field this year. Blake, I'm going to kind of take that same question to you. What's your, like, are you an Oscar season fan? Is this something that you really put any stock into? And if so, like, where did it kind of start for you? Do you remember an Oscars where you were really, like, hooked into it?
Sure. I love the Oscar season. Almost too much. I'm that guy who cares too much about it, to the point where like I'm a really sore loser when my favorite movies don't win. Where it's like, oh, this should really win, and when it doesn't, it's just like, ah, these just don't matter. Like no one cares about this, But as far as like my history with the Oscars, I was I don't remember any specific. Like ones as a kid that I remember watching. I remember seeing a couple of them just here and there. But when I really got into it was when Gladiator and like Traffic were up for Best Picture and all those and all the Oscars. And I found the blog. It was called Oscar Watch at the time. Now it's called Awards Daily. And I that's it's a website I used to go to daily, and now I only go to it daily. Probably from like September on through the Oscars, I'm there every day. But I've only missed one Oscars broadcast since 2000, and that was the year that No Country for Old Men won. I think I was going to a movie that night, and I don't know why, but I didn't watch that year. But otherwise, I watch every year. I love the Oscars, even though I think for the most part the award shows are pretty like iffy on what kind of content you get like how much people enjoy them. I tend to be on the like I don't know how it happens, but it seems like the ones that people like really hate are the ones that I enjoy, and then the ones that people really love, I'm kind of like I don't get why people love that award show, but I'm here for it every year. Derek and I got to watch one Oscars. I had a big party at my house one year. We watched Parasite win out of nowhere. That was a lot of fun. And we all know that our Oscar party this year is going to be a lot of fun. So I'm really looking forward to that. Looking forward to potentially a very boring Oscar ceremony, considering like one movie is potentially going to win everything. So, but yeah, I love the Oscars. I love the potential upsets. Like Derek, I've gotten into the guilds in the past like 10 or 15 years, and I really love watching all of like the precursors come together and like what takes precedence over this and the narratives outside of that and like the Sally Fields like you really love me like who's gonna take that type of thing. So I love the Oscars and I can't wait. I'm unabashedly I love the Academy Awards.
I do too. Like, and I feel like I've been that way for a long time. I think the first Oscars that really, like, caught my eye, like, where I just kind of stopped everything and paid attention to the Oscar, because they were always on in my house, like when it was award season. My mother loves watching award shows, so I always watched them. But I stopped and actually cared when Batman, 1989's Batman, was up for a bunch of, like, production design awards. I didn't know what that was at the time, but the various awards that it was up for, anytime they read Batman's name, I was like, oh yeah, that's gotta win. And it didn't, but and I don't remember what it actually walked away with, if anything. But it was just like, that was where I stopped and pay attention. And from kind of that point forward, I was like, well, I want to make sure that I pay attention. I want to watch the Oscars, find out more about these movies. The year that it became the Super Bowl for me, and I have not looked back since, was, like Derek said, 1994, or 95 for the 1994 Oscars, because that was Forrest Gump, Pulp Fiction, Shawshank Redemption, Quiz Show, Four Weddings and a Funeral. And it was like, I felt like it was my job to be the middle school sportscaster for the Oscars, talking about odds, talking about favorites, making sure everybody knew. But I was biased because Forrest Gump was my movie. I have not looked back since. Like, I have been just as obsessed in one way or another, even if I didn't feel like I necessarily had a movie that I was completely behind like I did that year. But it's just been like, that's just been the thing where it's like, I want to, you know, make sure that I take the time off. I'm not, you know, if I work a job where I work on the weekend, I don't work that day. I take that day off. Make sure I set aside time. Like that is, I, that is my thing. And I love it. I love award season. Also, like Derek said, I love award season when it doesn't run too long, because there hits this pivot point where it's like everything becomes negative and everybody hates every single movie that is up for awards because it's like, you know, you have the group of just using these year's movies as examples. You'll have the crowd that really loves Avatar 2. And then all of a sudden every other movie is terrible except for Avatar 2. And oh, sure. They're not going to give an award to Avatar 2 because nobody trusts James Cameron. And then you'll have the other people who are like, oh, Elvis is easily the movie to go with. And you know, there is no actor other than Austin Butler. And it just becomes super negative. And I don't like that. I want to think of the Oscars as an actual celebration of the movies, more so. Like it's an award ceremony, of course, but for me, it's this chance to, like, really celebrate something that I love. So that's what I like to think about it. And then when it gets negative, I'm just kind of like, I'm ready for a break.
Yeah. Two things to add to that. First, I do share your agreement with, you know, part of the magic of Oscar night for me is that at the end of the night, I always get that nice feeling of like, you know what? Movies are just awesome.
Yeah.
You know, despite however many overproduced montages you may have or musical performances or what have you, I just know feeling really good about cinema when all is said and done that night, regardless of who wins. It's a great celebration of like, look at this year of movies we had. And that's particularly awesome. The second thing I want to comment on is you mentioned to follow up more on like the point of award season going too long. I remember a few years ago, you know, the Parasite year where people were complaining, I can't believe the Oscars are going to be airing on February 9th, 2020. That's way too short for Oscar season. And yet, could you imagine what would have happened if we had like a mid to late March Oscars and that never happened that year and Parasite never got the glory of celebrating that night? I mean, we really dodged a bullet there. I just wanted to show.
More. I campaign for more early Oscars. But if what, like, thank God, because Parasite is incredible, and thank God it has its Oscar. So, what would you guys like to kind of start off with our Oscar coverage here for this year? Do you want to dive into the big category first, or do you have particular things that you each want to make sure that we cover and address before we kind of go category by category?
Well, we still haven't talked about All Quiet on the Western Front. I don't want to single it out as a favorite. I'm just saying, like, we all saw it together.
Yeah.
And we kind of have been saving it a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
So do we have to, like, and then I think we could talk about maybe the Best Picture nominees and like as a whole, right?
Yeah.
Like, in terms of quality, because in my opinion, as far as like when the Oscars went to 10 nominees, I think this is the best set of nominees we've ever had.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's what you guys want to do, but that'd be my suggestion.
I'm cool with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that sounds great. Blake, we'll start with you. I just listened to 4 minutes of you talking about loved All Quiet on the Western Front.
Yeah.
But I'm always down for hearing you talk about it more, how much you know about it. So tell us about All Quiet on the Western Front.
Well, yeah, so it's a you know, it's a new German movie, a Netflix movie. Not really a remake of the original that won Best Picture or the TV movie that came out in the 70s, but more of like a reimagining of the book. And for me personally, I kind of said this on your other show, but I didn't even know this existed until like September or October. And then when I heard of it, I was like, well, I don't need to see this. And slowly, like, one person talks about it, then another podcast talks about it, and then you see a tweet about it, and then you see one awards blog talk about it, and it's like, what? Like, okay, maybe I should see this then. And I finally watched it because, I mean, I knew that we all knew that the State Theater was going to get it. I just didn't think I would have time. And I watched it at home one Saturday night. I think I started at like 11:30, hoping to watch 45 minutes. And I was hooked and watched the whole thing in one night. And when the movie ended, I went on and bought my ticket immediately because I was like, I'm not missing this in the theater. And so I've seen it twice. I'll let you guys talk more about it before I finish. But like, if I was voting on the Oscars after Maverick, this would be my pick for Best Picture. So I really loved this reimagining of this story.
Yeah. Yeah. Derek, your thoughts on All Quiet on the Western Front.
Yeah. So I did not see this until it played at the State Theater. There's a part of me, I guess, for a couple of reasons. First off is there's always that impression that if you're going to see a war movie, it's kind of has to be seen on the big screen. There's nothing like it, and the way it can overwhelm your senses. When Blake and I saw it at the State, we were in like the fourth row from the front, which was perfect. So kudos to you for picking that, Blake. The other reason why I kind of held off until then is because, like Blake mentioned, this is kind of a late bloomer of a movie. And I think if we're going to kind of discuss its place in the Oscar conversation, I think we need to take a little bit of a step back and kind of talk about the fact that this has kind of surprisingly become Netflix's main Oscar contender for this year. Because, you know, as we've been following Oscar narratives these past few years, there's kind of been the whole thing of like Netflix is trying to be an Oscar player in the biggest way, you know, and they're making these big swings. You know, like Roma scooped up a handful of awards. Obviously, you know, the reason they greenlit The Irishman and its $300 million budget in the first place is because they were hoping that was going to be an Oscar contender and it ended up winning nothing. And this year especially, you know, they did have a lot of prospects going into it, all of which kind of fell apart for various reasons. Because you obviously, they've been sitting on Blonde for a while because they really didn't know what to do with that or how people were going to react to that. And it did scoop up the Ana de Armas nomination, so there's that. Baumbach's White Noise, that fell apart. Bardo fell apart. Obviously, they're going to try and make a play for Glass Onion as an Oscar contender, even though Knives Out only got a screenplay nomination. And this year, Glass Onion only got a screenplay nomination. And granted, they did have success with Pinocchio because it's got animated feature. It's got score and song. Is that right? So that scooped up. But obviously, most of Netflix's fate this year is in All Quiet on the Western Front, which is a bit of a surprise. And I think, you know, it's not going to be a dominant player that evening. We'll definitely get into what I think it will win. But, you know, as someone who's kind of been following, you know, Netflix's attempts to, you know, try and win Oscars so they can be seen as a major player in Hollywood and are still kind of fighting for that Best Picture win, especially now more than ever since Apple TV has beat them to the punch with Coda. It just continues to be a very interesting award season narrative and the twist and turns that takes each Oscar season.
Judging from this nomination list that I have that I'm looking at right now, the only nomination that Pinocchio has is animated feature. It did not get song or score. I think on the Golden Globes it had both of those, but not for the Oscars. Okay.
That's probably what I was thinking of.
It is really interesting that this is the one that they kind of put all of their like energy towards, because I think after you see how the other ones perform and how the other ones turn out, it's kind of like, oh, well, this is easily the best of those movies. I was much like both of you guys. I didn't even have this movie on my radar until very, very late in the game. And it might've been, I can't remember exactly what happened first. If you had seen it first, if you had watched it first on Netflix, or they had announced that it'd be playing at the State first. But whatever it was, that was where I was like, oh, well, I'm definitely going to go see it. Like I'll watch it. But then when you had said that it was really good, I was like, oh, okay. Well, then I'm excited to watch this because I, The last big war movie was 1917. I didn't really care for that movie.
Yeah.
So it was hard for me to muster up the extra level of excitement for another World War One movie. There are war movies that I really get behind, but this was one where I was really hesitant until it started. The moment that it started, I was completely locked in. And this has become one of my favorite movies of the year. On my list, it is my number. Hold on, I'll look here. My number three.
Oh wow.
I can spoil it now because technically the episode will have aired by the time this one comes on. Sure. So I'm just spoiling it for you guys. Sure. But yeah, All Quiet on the Western Front, my number three movie.
Wow.
Just like it, I saw it and it just changed pretty much everything as to where I stood on how good this movie is. And it's incredible. And all of the reasons that you note, Blake, in your little snippet on our Best of the Year episode, where you talk about how it's the horrors of war, and not just on the battlefield, but sending people to war, sending people who you know are from you know don't have any say, but they're the ones who are kind of put into harm's way. Like it's just horrifying. But an excellent movie that really, I don't know, it gets into the war in a different way. And I loved it. I loved it. I loved the movie, but was shocked and saddened by the narrative of it all, because war is a horrible thing. And to kind of get to see it from this perspective, probably puts it in that way, unlike any other movie that I've seen. So yeah, All Quiet on the Western Front, a truly exceptional movie that I also really, really loved. So let's kind of talk about the rest of the Best Picture field here. So I agree, this is a really strong category, and this might very well be one of the best since taking on up to 10 nominations. This might be one of the most well-rounded years. So our nominees for Best Picture are, of course, All Quiet on the Western Front, Avatar: The Way of Water, The Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fabelmans, Tar, Top Gun Maverick, Triangle of Sadness, and Women Talking. Derek, so give us your commentary on this category, either like movies you're cheering for, movies you think will win, movies you want to win, just kind of a general thoughts on Best Picture this year.
Yeah, I'll just run quickly down the list. I didn't really give any thoughts on All Quiet on the Western Front in my previous speech, but I'll just say that, you know, the way it portrays things as a vicious cycle, that opening montage, and seeing the turning around of the uniform and flipping it to our hero, and just, the old codgers, just fueling, the mill with, a new crop of recruits, just the dread of, yep, it's coming. It's, it's terrifying, and of course this has been mentioned before, but, from the technical perspective, in terms of like the score and all that stuff, it's great. I did want to mention quick, I don't know if either of you guys saw this, but it's All Quiet on the Western Front is getting a 4K disc US release at the end of this month, not from Criterion, as we were hoping for. It's coming out from MPI. But it's a rare instance where a Netflix movie is getting an actual physical release here in the States. So nice. FYI on that. Avatar, I won't get into it too much because I know neither of you guys have seen it yet. But I think it does for a sequel, I think it does very well of, in terms of clearing the hurdles. I think it had obviously a lot of people were gunning against it, going into the release of this movie. But again, Cameron demonstrates, his synthesis of narrative, his staging of action sequences, and the visuals are, I would even say, a quantum leap above what we got in the I'll look forward to when you guys ultimately get to see it, but I have no qualms with this movie's placement in the list, so I'm cool with that. Banshees, I think, is a fine film. I've watched it just the once when it finally came to the state theater belatedly. I've had no desire to rewatch it, but I think it's a strong movie. I really like Colin Farrell's work in that movie. You know, I think his character is key to making this movie work, because he has to be the kind of person that, you know, can get under your skin somewhat for Brendan Gleeson to go like, yeah, we're not friends anymore. I think it kind of collapses a little bit once the movie kind of, you know, the movie puts a Chekhov's gun on the table, so to speak. And there's a threat of like, is it going to happen? Is it going to happen? And I think once it does happen, it deflates for me, but I won't get on any further into that. But it's still a 4-star movie for me. Elvis, I know the Academy has a propensity to award their music biopics, but I'm much more in favor of a movie like this getting a Best Picture nominee than, say, a Bohemian Rhapsody, because tech stuff is on point. Austin Butler is giving it its all. I will forever go to the mat for Tom Hanks' performance in this movie. It is the type of over-the-top villain performance that you would expect from a Baz Luhrmann movie, and I love it. So that's cool with me. Everything Ever All at Once, what can be said about this movie? I love it. I just finished watching it for the fifth time at the state yesterday evening, and it doesn't get old for me. It's lovely. The Fablemans, I know I'm by far the biggest fan in this group of the movie. I know, Andy, I thought you was fine. Blake, you were more mixed on it. I think the movie does a very good job synthesizing Spielberg's youth into a narrative. It is a movie that's, you know, in a way it's about movies, but it doesn't bog itself down in it as much as you would think, or as much as detractors who go off on movies about movies would think there would be. There is a human family narrative to this movie that drives it, and I think is the core of this movie more so than anything related to Spielberg starting to make movies. It's a lovely drama. Tar, really awesome. Cate Blanchett giving it her all. Todd Field making lots of great choices. I know it's kind of been withering a little bit, and I'll be honest, I'm kind of sick of the whole social media, hey guys, Lydia Tarr is a real person stuff that's going on. But that doesn't detract from the movie itself. It's solid. Top Gun Maverick, the blockbuster of the year. It needed to be on this list. Yep. You know, it harkens back to that era, you know, like as we were talking about our experiences in the 90s and late 80s, you know, watching movies and kind of cheering for like when the big popular movies were actually in contention. This is a nice hearkening back to that, even though I don't think it's going to get much that night. But still, I'm rooting for what it can get. And we'll talk about what I think it can get later. Triangle of Sadness. This is probably my least favorite movie of the Best Picture bunch, but it's still like a 3.5 out of 5 for me. I love the middle section of this movie. I think the third act goes on far longer than I needed it to. I'm like, okay, I get the point. But I can still see why this movie got its Best Picture nomination, and its director and its screenplay nod. I'm fine with that. And I can't talk about Women Talking yet because I'll be seeing it at the State Theater for the very first time this weekend. So I'll have to leave that to you guys.
Awesome. Blake, yeah, before I kind of discuss them, I'm interested for your point of view on these 9 other movies. I know pretty much where you stand on All Quiet on the Western Front, but how about the other ones?
You might have to remind me of some of these movies. So Avatar, like Derek said, I have not seen. Is Banshees next? So Banshees, I really love this one. It's not my favorite McDonough. I still ride hard for 3 Billboards. I think that's his masterpiece so far. But I'm a big fan of this movie. I really enjoy the performances and everything. The writing is really solid. What's next?
Elvis.
Okay, so Elvis. I saw the trailer and was like, this looks like absolute garbage. And I went into it. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna hate this movie, and but I don't care. I'm gonna watch it, and I had to watch it over two different watch periods. But I walked away, honestly thinking like, wow, I think this is a really great movie, and I really wouldn't care if it's won, Best Picture or anything.
Sure.
I'm also a really, really big fan of Tom Hanks's performance. It's, if you look at the movie as if Elvis was the superhero, then you have to have a supervillain.
Yes.
And if you think that you're going to have some sort of like tame performance from a character named the Colonel, like in a Baz Luhrmann movie, I don't know what you're, I don't know where you're, what you're thinking. Like you're going to get something like that. I thought Tom Hanks is a lot of good, is really good. Not Oscar worthy, obviously. I'm not really too mad about that. Everything Everywhere All at Once, I've only seen it the one time, and that was over a year ago. But I had a great experience with that. I loved the night watching it. The audience was great. I felt like I had seen some filmmakers who were able to sort of like capture the idea of like film language, of like showing us images, and it just transpires into us emotionally. And I just felt like I saw like a new way of that. And I'm not saying it's a landmark movie or anything. It just felt very fresh.
Yeah.
The Fablemans, yeah, I don't really care for this movie too much. I was quite maybe I don't know what I was expecting with this. I read someone's review that said that this is Spielberg's independent movie, and I want to go back and rewatch it with that lens. But I was sort of like, I was sort of waiting to get. I think I was waiting to get to like the filmmaking stuff. Like,
Sure.
I know we get a lot of that, but I was waiting to get like him in Hollywood, and I guess that's not the story we're getting. And if you know Spielberg, he sort of like made his entire career about fathers who disappoint their families, and this felt like him making that up. I just don't know if I needed 2.5 hours of that, and it just, to me, it doesn't come alive until the David Lynch stuff, and that's at the very end of the movie. But I want to rewatch it because Spielberg's one of my favorite directors, and I have a feeling I missed the boat on this. So yeah, I'm not going to be too harsh on that one.
Tar.
Tar, gosh, Derek, when we saw it, I kept saying like I can't believe this movie exists. A human being made this movie. I just like I had so many questions about what had happened, what had transpired, and I had realized that that was the point, and I wasn't going to get answers, and I was really okay with that. Sometimes you see a movie and you have all these questions and there's no answers. But you need answers, and with this, it's made with questions that there's just no answers for. And I really loved the peaks and valleys. And when I mean valleys, I don't mean any bad stuff. I just mean like all the like it's like a roller coaster ride, and you just never know where it's going. I never knew where it was going at all. And I sort of love movies like that. And for this movie to end on one big joke, I think that's just a masterstroke. I've often said that Jonathan Glazer is like the heir to Stanley Kubrick, but I kind of think it might be Todd Field because this is a very Kubrickian movie. And I just think, like, listen, I love Michelle Yeoh and I've been a fan for her for years. And I would love to see her win an Oscar, but like, I think if we want to pull the merit card, like, there's just no way like Cate Blanchett needs to lose this. Like, it's just one of the great all-time performances. By anyone, and I'm gonna be really upset if she loses because, like, this is the grand performance of the decade, the century, or whatever you want to say. For my money,
Sure.
Top Gun Maverick is my favorite movie of 2022. This is what I'm pulling for to win Best Picture. I know it like it's. I feel like I had a chance maybe like 6 weeks ago. Like I think there was some
Yeah.
sort of narrative where it could have played out. I don't think I think that narrative has completely sailed. I think if it had won like the PGA, there'd have been a shot, but like this is just a steam train out of control that, it's headed for the multiverse. So I don't think it's gonna win, but Garrick, you wanna say something?
Yeah, I mean, I can. A part of me was like, okay, if it got like 7 or 8 noms and not just the 6, I think it would have had a shot. I think it's also been kind of ruined a little bit because Tom Cruise had a very minimal window to kind of work the Oscar circuit because he's still filming Mission Impossible 8. So that's kind of interfering with things a little bit. And of course, as well as the fact that Tom Cruise is going to be picky and choosy about what he does because his Oscar campaign has basically been the PGA speech, the Oscar luncheon, and his appearance on Jimmy Kimmel. And that's basically been it. Which is too bad, you know, because I think if he really put his effort into it and wanted to get it, I'm sure he would have worked just as hard as he does on the actual making of his movies to get that if he wanted to. But it is what it is.
So if that won Best Picture, I would be running around the room. But yeah, like it's not gonna happen. Its nomination is the win. I would have loved to see the Best Actor nomination. I held out slight hope for that. Very happy for Paul Mescal. That was a great performance. And Triangle Sadness, I talked about in the last episodes. So I won't say too much. I love it. And I'm really happy to see it here. And Women Talking is the last one I watched, and I thought that was great as well. Never has the title of a movie been more correct. It's women talking for 90 minutes. Thanks to that, I've had the monkeys stuck in my head for the past couple weeks, and I've been playing Daydream Believer nonstop to the point where my daughter is getting really sick of it. But I'm a big fan of Sarah Polley as a director. I still like Take This Waltz as my favorite movie of hers, but this is still an excellent endeavor. And Rooney, Ma Rooney, Rooney Mara and Ben Whishaw are incredible in Women Talking, and I kind of wish there was a Ben Whishaw Best Supporting Actor because I just think he has a heartbreaking role in this movie. And so I really love that one. I would be happy with any of these to win, maybe outside of The Fablemans, but I wouldn't be too disappointed if Spielberg, got some glory too. So.
I so of this whole category, five of these movies made my top 10 of the year list. And that's pretty good. That's pretty good. And then a couple of the other ones are in my, somewhere along the way, of favorite movies of the year. But just kind of running through them, I love All Quiet on the Western Front. I don't think it's going to win Best Picture, but it will win something else later on. I have not the only movie of this crop I have not seen is Avatar: The Way of Water. I have a hard time getting excited to see it, but I might try and check it out this week just because I would have liked to see it. I'd still like to see it as even though I'm not super enthusiastic about it. Banshees of Inisherin. I love Martin McDonagh, but this movie didn't excite me. Not something I have any interest in revisiting. I would rather watch In Bruges or Three Billboards again. Elvis, I thought was exhilarating. I completely agree. I would much rather see a movie like this over Bohemian Rhapsody, and Queen is my favorite band of all time. But I would still enthusiastically watch this again more than watching the Lifetime movie that is Bohemian Rhapsody. Everything Everywhere All at Once. I absolutely adore this movie, and I am still amazed that a movie that I thought was going to be the underdog after the credits rolled back in April has now become the front runner and favorite. And that makes me very happy. The Fablemans is fine. It's fine. I also was a little disappointed in it, and I was extremely disappointed in the performances of Paul Dano and Michelle Williams. I thought they were serviceable, but just a little, I don't
Are you
know.
being facetious?
No, I didn't care for their performances. I thought,
Really?
yeah, I thought Sammy, is it Sammy? Is that his name?
Gabriel LeBet?
Yeah, I thought he was great. I thought he was fantastic. But
Interesting.
I thought the parents were irritating, Michelle Williams especially.
Yeah. So
I found her grating.
Spielberg had his sisters on set a couple of days, and they were like, "Did you resurrect mom to be back in this?" Like, So like, I guess supposedly she nailed it, but I can understand that because I too found her grating at times. But interesting,
So
interesting.
That was just me. So that was
okay.
not my favorite. And I love Steven Spielberg. Steven Spielberg, one of my top five favorite directors.
Yeah, he's the
but
goat.
This, yeah. But this just wasn't my isn't near the top of my list of his movies. Tar, wonderful, just excellent movie. I deeply love. I don't want Kate Blanchett to win just because I have another favorite, but I won't be
you
upset
bastard.
If she does. I know,
yeah,
I get it.
Yeah.
Top Gun Maverick rules. Thank you, Tom Cruise and Joseph Kaczynski, for making this movie and bringing us back to the movie theaters for something this good and exciting. Triangle of Sadness, I don't care. it's fine. And Women Talking is excellent. I really wish that Jesse Buckley or
She's
Claire
good.
Foy were also in the supporting actress conversation, because I think this is a really great movie. Absolutely true. The title of this movie super fits, but it is a powerful, powerful conversation. I think this is a great category. Mm-hmm. Even for the movies that I'm not as excited about, I completely understand why they're here and know that they have their supporters and are deserving of those supporters. So really, really solid category. Do we want to go through and say what we think should win and what will win?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Right. For me, my will win is Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah.
And just based upon my Letterboxd ratings, again, as I said in my clip on Andy's Best Of Show, it's the only movie that I gave a full 5 stars to in 2022. And I do that very sparingly for new movies, as Blake will attest to. I know we're at the point in, you know, where I'm starting to see the Oscar online conversation shift to like, oh, well, of course the Academy is going to reward a movie like Everything Ever All at Once. They always reward movies like this. And I'm like, okay, hold on here.
Yeah.
I am genuinely gobsmacked that a movie like this, like, as Andy said, has kind of defeated the odds, has remained in the conversation for a full year now. I mean, it came out last March. It's now March of 2023. We're still talking about it. It's impressive. It's scooping up wins left and right for the movie and for Daniels and its cast. It's absolutely incredible. You know, and if we're being honest, like, how many major Oscar winners do we have that have major scenes involving butt plugs or killing somebody with giant dildos or hot dog fingers or all that
wait
stuff.
Till you see Women Talking, Derek, because
oh wow. Wow, those
no,
Mennonites.
I'm just kidding.
Wow.
I'm just kidding. No,
it's not
you're
the
right.
movie you thought it was.
So that's your will win. Your should win the same then?
Yeah. I mean, just from my ranking of the movies this year, it's on the top of the list, so it's equal for me. Again, you know, I would be happy with, you know, at least half of the other movies in this list getting the prize, if I were to be perfectly honest. You know, if it went to All Quiet or Tar or Top Gun Maverick or Fablemans, I'd be perfectly cool with that, which again is back to Andy's point about just, you know, how strong a lineup this is overall. But you know, if I have to narrow it down to one, it's Everything Ever All at Once, because it is just a singular movie experience this year. And I'm just still gobsmacked that, you know, it's going to get all that hardware a week from now. So,
Blake, I'm gonna hop in just before you say your answer, because mine is the same. I'm also Everything Everywhere should win and will win. I'm not going to be disappointed, especially if All Quiet on the Western Front or Top Gun Maverick win. I won't be disappointed, but the story behind Everything Everywhere All at Once and how emotionally connected I was to a movie that, as Derek said, has a scene where somebody lands asshole down on a butt plug trophy and rubs a hot dog finger in somebody's mouth, that I would be so connected emotionally to a movie with Raccoon. Never would have expected it, but I adore this movie, and I want it to win, and I think it's going to be the story of the year, and it will win.
Yeah, so one thing I forgot to mention was when I saw Everything Everywhere all at Once last year, I remember going to Derek and I said something to the effect of, like, this should get a ton of Oscar nominations, but it's not going to get any. And I still don't think in that moment that was a wrong statement to say, because generally these movies get forgotten about. But somehow this movie has persevered, and I don't know how it's possible. It's just everyone's talking about it. So it's my will win as well, because it has won everything, leading up to this night so far. I can't see anything beating it unless there's some, like, miracle Hail Mary. I'm gonna change it up. I should win. I think it should be Top Gun Maverick. What this movie did at the box office, and like for a Rotten Tomato score on both the critics and audience score, I think one's at like a 98 and one's at a 99. If you go to Amazon Prime, it's there's 75,000 reviews and they're all 5 stars. Not I mean not all, but like it's like a 5-star average or something. It's quite remarkable for a movie where everyone was going to see it. Some people saw it 20 times in theaters. I'm not, but it's just a movie that, like, people went and saw and said, "Have you seen it yet? Have you gone?" "No, I'm gonna go." I left work early to go see it. I had a coworker go leave work early to go see it. And it's the movie that, quote unquote, brought people back to the cinema. My wife was dying to see it. My mom went and saw it by herself. Because people were saying it's just like, and yeah, it's a movie that harkens back to, like Derek said, old Hollywood, where you go see a movie star performance, you know what's going to happen, and you're still emotionally invested. I remember, like, just I kept leaning more and more towards the screen as the movie went on. My skin was tingling more as the movie went on. I cried at the end when the Lady Gaga song dropped. It's a great, it, like, we're not going to get a movie like this ever again, ever again. Maybe Tom Cruise makes one when he's 80, but maybe Tom Cruise remakes like The Natural when he's 80 or something, but, like, we're not getting this again, and go ahead, Derek.
Oh, I was gonna say, to even put in the parlance of Tom Cruise's career, he's making all these Mission Impossible movies, and just as action stunt extravaganzas, they're great. But my one demerit with those movies is I'm always left cold by Ethan Hunt. It's an emotionless performance. And in Top Gun Maverick, you genuinely see Tom Cruise working his movie star muscles on the screen there. The sequence between him and Val Kilmer, Tom Cruise just giving it all. I mean, that's a scene that probably shouldn't work given, all the hurdles and just the significance of the situation, but he nails that scene. And there are other moments that he nails in the movie too. And, it's the disappointing thing. Like, he's just got that incredible charisma on screen deployed there. And it's all going to go away when we get Mission Impossible 7 and 8 this year and the next. And we're not going to see that, as full throttle as we saw it in Maverick. And my one hope would be that, that would be the lesson that Tom Cruise take away from this is that, it's sometimes it's not necessarily just, hanging off of planes and stuff like that. It's actually just being a genuine movie star. That's what I miss.
We want to see him reckoning with his age. Like, I think that's part of what made the character so engaging, was it's like I think they even say it in the movie, like he's a dying breed or a dinosaur or something
He's a
like that,
relic,
something can, yeah. And it's like having somebody show that, no, I can be strong, I can still prove my value, my worth, and show that there's never going to be, an alternative to a good, reliable human fighter pilot. Like, I don't know. I think you're absolutely right there. There's as much as I love the Mission Impossible movies, there is something about Tom Cruise in this movie playing that character that helped make this movie as successful as it was. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys said all of the people in your life that, you know, went to see this movie. I saw this movie, came home, told my girlfriend how much I loved it, and then she and her sister went out and saw it and just loved it as well. And it's always a big deal to me when my girlfriend really loves a movie, because mm-hmm. that's where it's like, oh, this hit that. You know, this hit that category of people who don't always love everything mm-hmm. that's super popular, and she really connected with it too. And I think that's, you know, that this movie has kind of hit all of those posts. Like that's important, and it's nice to have a movie like that included in this category where it's like, mm-hmm. this is a movie that people genuinely love, and it deserves that love. It's so good. Yeah. So good.
Yeah, it's yeah.
So yeah, I think you know, as we said, the will win. I don't think there's a lot of room for surprises in that category, but you know, no. there are alternate movies that I think would still make us very happy, both of them with their military connections, especially. Mm-hmm. So do you guys want to talk about best director? Is that where you'd like to go next?
Sure.
I don't know how much of a conversation you want to have on that, but we'll dive into it anyway.
Yeah.
Derek or Blake, who wants to start off talking about director?
I'll let Derek start.
Yeah, I'll run through it. So the nominees, just to refresh, Martin McDonagh for Banshees, Daniels for Everything Ever All at Once, Spielberg for The Fablemans, Todd Field for Tar, and Ruben Östlund for Triangle of Sadness. So my will win at this point is Daniels. I'm basically at the point where, you know, the Everything Everywhere tide, you know, is just rising so much that, you know, I don't think they can go away. I mean, for a long while, I kind of had Spielberg kind of taking this away, and yeah. To his credit, Spielberg, you know, is still jockeying for it. I think it was Thursday night. I was watching Stephen Colbert, and they basically devoted the whole hour to Colbert going out to Amblin's offices and interviewing Spielberg and John Williams about the Fablemans. Mm. So he's definitely gunning for it. And, you know, I wouldn't be hurt if he got an Oscar for this. Much in the same way I wouldn't be hurt if, you know, I think Todd Field is also very deserving of a best directing statue here, because, you know, Tar is a true auteur piece. You know, he's made a lot of very specific and intentional choices with the material, and it's a fascinating Rubik's Cube of a movie to kind of, you know, decode and figure out and just kind of see all these little nuances that he's getting at. But at the end of the day, Everything Ever All at Once is, you know, I've just rewatched this movie twice at the State Theater this week. And the more I watch it, the more I realize just how complex of a story and a narrative this is. And, you know, to a credit of Daniels, for as well as the actors, for juggling like all the different elements and multiverses and different variants of characters that are here, and being able to have this, you know, grand unifying vision and being able to kind of pull it all together into this narrative in this movie that is, you know, managed to play pleasingly to millions of moviegoers has been very impressive. And I can't deny what they've put together here. Having it make sense and having it be as entertaining and emotionally cathartic as it is. So I have no qualms giving it to them. So they're definitely their will win. And I kind of think I just kind of argued them into the should win category as well. So there you go.
Blake, I'll hand it over to you. My answer is the same as Derek's.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, they're obviously going to win.
Yeah.
I mean, DGA doesn't match up 100% with the Oscars Best Director, but, like, there's just so much love for this movie that I can't see anything else winning at this time. If I were to choose, if I voted, I would vote for Todd Field for Tar. Like Derek said, I just think there's so much going on with what he's trying to say, and his ability to put images together and ideas around this performance and like string people along for nearly 3 hours. I just think like It's a remarkable achievement. So for me, like, that's who I would vote for is Todd Field. And I like Derek, I too would like to see Steven Spielberg win another one. I just don't see like the Fablemans as like this like expertly. I'm gonna say this and it's gonna sound terrible, but like it's not like a showy, you know, thing, the Fablemans. So like it's hard for me to be like, yeah, best director Steven Spielberg. It's like, all right, like this would be like a lifetime achievement, best director for him. So
yeah. I think the story here is mainly the narrative behind the movie.
Right.
You know, sure. Just like, right. I'm making a movie about, you know, how I basically became a filmmaker.
Right.
And that's kind of what's fueling the momentum for it more than possibly anything in the movie itself, if we were to be sure. honest.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know you guys would probably laugh at this, but I wouldn't mind a Ruben Östlund, like out of nowhere, like, you know, steal the best. Not going to happen, but, yeah. So go ahead.
I was just gonna say, it would be crazy. Like that would be one hell of a story to have kind of this out of nowhere, one kind of swipe in and take it. I kind of agree with you guys on, I think this award is going to go to Daniels. It's the one that I would give. I would do the, will win, should win for Daniels for Everything Everywhere. But Todd Field is my next in line, because you really do have to make sense of all of the things that Tar is, you know, bring all of the elements together to tell the story that Tar is trying to tell. And, you know, one of the ultimate jobs of the director is to help kind of rein the actors in to make their performance kind of fit the narrative of the story. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Cate Blanchett, massively talented actress. But I think there's this, he's got to kind of guide her to kind of keep her informed on what's going on in this world to really bring her to life. And I think, it's an excellently directed movie. So yeah, that would be my next pick. But I'm going Daniels on this one. Where do you guys want to go next? Are other categories that really stand out to you guys?
I'll throw out a diversion here real quick. I kind of want to touch a little bit on international feature for a second, because I think one of you were alluding to it, the fact that this is probably the category that All Quiet on the Western Front is going to win that night, simply just because of how it dominated the nominations in general, more so than any other movie in that category. But I did also want to call it out because, as I kind of noted to myself this weekend, the state managed to end up bringing three of the five nominees to town in All Quiet and Close and EO, which, if we're being honest, is probably a lot more than we probably have ever had in Sioux Falls prior to an Oscar ceremony, if I'm being honest. Obviously, Andy and I both saw Close this past weekend. We very much enjoyed it, and we've all gushed about EO on a prior episode. I've not seen the other two contenders, Argentina 1985 and The Quiet Girl. But at this point, I think it's All Quiet's to lose at this point.
Yeah, I think so as well. But man, like, it's so tough because All Quiet on the Western Front is my favorite of these, the ones that I've seen. Argentina 1985 is on Amazon Prime. Oh, I might try and watch that before the ceremony. And Quiet Girl is available for pre-order on like Apple and other services, but it doesn't have a date listed. So I'll have to, I don't know, maybe they'll surprise us and that'll come out on Tuesday. But of the ones that I've seen, All Quiet on the Western Front is still my favorite, but I would be lying if I didn't say that part of me, even though I like EO more and it's higher on my list, something about Close really, and it's probably recency bias. Like, just to be completely honest, like, because that movie is so fresh in my head, and the experience that I had with it the other night, there's something that it's like, if this ends up winning, I'm completely fine with that. Because wow, what an emotional gut punch of a movie. But I think this is a great category, and I feel very, very lucky that we were blessed with the state kind of bringing this stuff in so that we could, you know, get the opportunity to see it, that there's great stuff in this category. Yeah, Blake, what were some of your thoughts on this category?
Well, I've only seen two of the movies, EO sure. and All Quiet. I'm not sure I agree that All Quiet is the front. I mean, maybe it's the front runner. I don't think it's a guaranteed lock. I feel like something like Close could steal it, or even something like Argentina 1985. But I don't know much to say. I guess if I did pick one, I would say All Quiet is probably going to win. And you know, like I thought EO was very good, but I would say that All Quiet also deserves to win. So,
yeah.
Even though I love that fucking donkey so much, you know,
right.
So, yeah, I don't know much to say about this one.
Yeah. Yeah. Good category though. And I, again, like just to say it again, really, really lucky that we were able to see, three of these in theaters.
You know, and not only that, but like EO sold really well.
Yeah,
actually, sort of All Quiet in the Western. I mean, both of them did. I don't know how well Close did, but EO, you know, esoteric movie about a donkey did pretty well. So
yeah,
and not only that, but the state also brought in a bunch of movies on the short list as well, like Decision to Leave,
Yeah,
Spider, and Corsage, which is great as well. So
I mean, Decision to Leave was one of the ones people thought was almost like a lock, you know, and
yeah.
Chan-wook Park was they're talking him getting a Best Director nomination. So it was, I wonder how close that was to getting in. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Thinking about that, it's kind of wild that it didn't, but you know, the three that I've seen in this category are really, really good. So, where do you guys want to go next? We've got the performance Oscars.
Yeah. Let's get into the acting ones.
Okay, let's start with probably how the broadcast will begin. I'm going to predict that it starts with supporting actor. So I'll run down the nominees here and kind of offer my thoughts to kick things off. And I think this is I think this is another sure thing. So Brendan Gleeson, The Banshees of Inisherin, Brian Tyree Henry in Causeway, Judd Hirsch in The Fablemans, Barry Keoghan in The Banshees of Inisherin, and Ki Hui Kwan, Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is my will win, should win. Thank God he's back. What an excellent performance. Just great to watch. And his story behind the scenes is exactly the kind of thing that Oscar voters love. So I really don't think it's going to go any other way. And I will just say though, after seeing The Fablemans, Judd Hirsch's nomination is kind of odd, but maybe that's just me. We'll see what you guys think. But what are your thoughts on this category, Best Supporting Actor?
Yeah, I'll get into it. I'll just get the obvious stuff out of the way. Your will and should is mine as well. You mentioned the narrative about it, but it's, again, the pleasure of seeing these actors and everything all at once getting to do or getting to have this screen time is they really get to do everything. And it's really fun to see, you know, like Kyo-hye Kwan, you know, get to be kind of like the oblivious Raymond, like the, oh, wow, what a fast elevator. As well as, you know, like the confident Alphaverse Raymond, you know, who's like, you know, and just the right off the bat, how he kind of has that shows that, you know, dichotomy and difference between the two. But then you also get, you know, to speak to our series, you get the Wong Kar-wai section of Everything Over All Once, and just a smooth, suave motherfucker in that. It's great. As well as getting to do stuff like the fanny pack fight. It's the total package. And, you know, he's deserved every one of his wins in this Oscar season. You know, it's going to be an emotional way to start the evening next week, just watching him win that, because it's just such a great, great story, and just happy to see him, you know, finally being able to, you know, after years of struggling, you know, and even getting out of the business, being able to come back in such a great, great way. It's truly inspiring, and I'm all for it. I'll touch briefly on some of the other stuff. I kind of see where you're getting at with the Judd Hirsch thing. You know, hearing all the praise, like, yes, spontaneous applause at the TIFF premiere when Judd Hirsch's scene was over and stuff like that. It's like, okay, it's fine. It's a fine 10-minute stretch. You know, I can't say I was overtly enthused, you know, the way it played out, but, you know, it's fine. And again, it probably has parallels, you know, to like a real-life Uncle Boris and Spielberg's life, so that's perfectly fine. Of the Banshees nominations, I just find it glad to see that Barry Keoghan has a nomination in general. He's just one of our most peculiar up-and-coming actors, you know, who can show up in anything, whether it's like Killing of a Sacred Deer or The Green Knight or, you know, heaven forbid, even though it's probably an obvious pick, just like, yeah, let's just make him the next Joker in the Batman. I'm like, hey, he's at least distinct and notable, you know, and it's just fun to see him doing something weird and goofball, no matter when you see him. And then I have not seen Causeway, but to kind of paraphrase from a chat conversation we were having last week, Brian Tyree Henry is kind of stepping up to be one of our new roster of character actors who can come in, you know, like do something like a drop in on Beale Street Could Talk, or elevating, you know, Thomas the Tank Engine soliloquies in Bullet Train. You know, the man can do anything and everything. And I can't blame him for, you know, can't blame the Academy for giving him a nomination here. Because, you know, he's on the rise and he's going to break through here, probably with an Oscar here at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. Blake, your thoughts on this category?
Yeah, my could win, should win, or will win, should win is not any different than you guys. I really have nothing much to add on him. I will say I will not complain. No, you know what? I don't want to see anybody else win this award. I was going to say it'd be cool to see Barry Keoghan win, and you know, maybe it will, or maybe it would be cool, but you know, it's just so cool to see Short Round come back out of nowhere, and yeah. You know, yeah, it's just like you can tell he's so happy, you know, to just be back, and as Derek said, it's just his Tony Leung performance in Everything Everywhere All at Once is so much fun to watch. And I don't want anybody else to win. So
Yep. I'm, like I said, right there with you on that one. Dive into supporting actress. I'll go ahead and do the same thing here. I'll read off the nominees and then give my thoughts. So we've got Angela Bassett for Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, Hong Chau for The Whale, Carrie Condon for The Banshees of Inisherin, Jamie Lee Curtis for Everything Everywhere All at Once, and Stephanie Hsu, Everything Everywhere All at Once. I think my will win will be Angela Bassett. I know that Jamie Lee Curtis took the SAG Award for Everything Everywhere All at Once. But I feel like there's a lot of back and forth, and I think they're going to acknowledge Angela Bassett more on a maybe more on a career level, even though Jamie Lee Curtis has also had that career recognition. But I have a feeling Angela Bassett will take this. My should win, though, is also Everything Everywhere All at Once. But it is the just one of the best performances in that movie, and that's Stephanie Hsu. I think her performance as the daughter, Joy, is just everything that character does and goes through, and you know, much like the other characters, you've got to play a whole variety, kind of run the gamut of things that your character is going through, and I think she is just exceptional. So she's my pick for should win, but I think Angela Bassett is going to take it in supporting actress. Blake, we'll go to you first. What do you think?
I have to be honest, I watched Black Panther last night and this morning, and I just do not understand the nomination for Angela Bassett. But maybe in the sense that it's a career thing, I can see that, but yeah, I don't know. It's a fine performance. Jamie Lee Curtis is a baffling nomination to me as well. Again, I don't think she stands out too much from this other than waving hot dog fingers around a couple of times.
Yeah.
So my oh man. I'm gonna listen. I'm really bad at when people ask like for advice, I'm always like, don't ask me who's gonna win because I always don't pick with my mind. I pick with my heart. And I think Carrie Condon's gonna win. So she's my will win, Carrie Condon. Because I can't see Banshees going home empty-handed from this. And who I think should win is probably Stephanie Shu.
Yeah, it's a this is a tougher category than I think maybe it seemed like earlier on because you know I don't know I don't know it's just it's a tough category and I think there are people that think there's a definite winner.
I don't, yeah. I don't know what
I
it
don't
is.
know I don't know Derek, your thoughts, what give us your expert opinion of this tricky category.
So first off, I'm going to preface it by saying the one thing I didn't mention is so I have completed my Oscar ballot.
Oh,
I have
nice.
submitted it to Allison at the State for the State's Oscar pool. I locked it in last Thursday. I just had to go like, I don't want to fuss over it too much. I know, Blake, you're like, yeah, I'm going to be fussing over it until like, hours before, but I'm like, I just gotta throw it in there and just get it out there and then just relieve myself and not have to worry about the
Sure,
consequences. So
sure.
I'm gonna step through the nomination here. Angela Bassett, I was kind of waffling back and forth on whether she'd get it. I mean, there was a period where she probably was. I think what's probably gonna work against her right now also is we're kind of in a bit of a, right now, this very minute, we're kind of in a bit of a Marvel backlash period because of Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania. And I can see that kind of norbiting Bassett from winning a little bit, as much as it would be a career achievement. I think that might just be the landing blow for it. Hong Chau is great, although again, a lot of people, it's surprising how many people I say like, yeah, but we all know this is really a nomination for Hong Chau in the menu, which would be great. As much as I would love them to play the tortillas clip on the Oscars, we know it's not going to happen, but she does great work in it, but not enough to upset it. Condon, like I guess looking at my ballot and how I finished it, I currently have Banshees going home empty-handed on Sunday night, and that's probably just what it's gonna be. So to get into what I'm actually gonna do here, because I've weeded out the other three, at this point I'm gonna stick to what SAG has done. I'm gonna say Jamie Lee Curtis will win. I guess that's got the career achievement momentum. Again, I can't deny the SAG power here at this point. I'm with you that Stephanie Hsu should win, because ultimately the big core of this movie is this mother-daughter rift, and you don't have that without both ends of that spectrum giving it their all. And she's very well deserving of it. And I should also mention here, I don't know if you guys have heard this, but Stephanie Hsu is going to be performing the Best Original Song nominee from Everything Ever All at Once at the Oscars, along with Song
Yeah.
Lux and David Byrne. So that'll
Yeah,
be a
I did
treat.
hear that. Big loved person on this show from the Guys on the
Yeah.
Show, David Byrne.
Probably wears a
So
big
that'll be
suit
cool.
when he performs it too.
He has to. He has to,
Yeah, a
right?
big
That's
tux.
his shtick.
Big suit.
Yeah, it's it's kind of cool to see that we're all kind of very similar there on the Stephanie shoe of it all. Where do you guys want to go next? Anybody want to
Let's just
lead
knock the
actor, lead actress?
actors. Yeah.
Okay. All right, so let's go lead actor here. So this is Austin Butler in Elvis, Colin Farrell in The Banshees of Inisherin, Brendan Fraser in The Whale, Paul Mescal in Aftersun, and Bill Nye in Living. Somebody else take this one
Okay,
first.
I'll go. I'll go.
Okay.
First off, I kind of want to comment on what Blake was touching about earlier in terms of the, there is kind of that race nomination day where it's like, is Tom Cruise going to get the fifth spot? Because Butler and Farrell and Fraser and Nighy were all locked. And we were all wondering, you know, can he scoot it in? And the minute I knew it was done, well before the nominations came out, was when they announced that Paul Mescal was going to be the star of Gladiator II. At that point, I knew to myself, like, yep, this guy's getting christened by Hollywood. He is the lock now for that fifth spot. But, you know, Mescal doing great work here. You know, it's a, you know, it's a, much like in Tar, there, it's a intriguing performance to decode and read between the lines, you know, and what's not said in this father-daughter relationship. So there's that. I think I'm the only person here who's seen Living, if I'm not mistaken. Bill Nighy is fine. I think I'm kind of, as a kind of, I know Andy's definitely seen my comment on this, but I think part of the thing is because I've seen Ikaru, and, you know, was kind of amazed when I watched that a couple years ago at the state, and then kind of seeing this essentially beat for beat remake. It's like 30, 40 minutes shorter, but it really hits all the same beats, you know, and Bill Nighy playing this very dry old Englishman. It's a fine performance. It's a career achievement thing, as are many of these nominations in the acting categories. But that's basically where it is. Colin Farrell, my favorite performance in The Banshees of Inisherin. I know there's a big contingent online who's like, Colin Farrell is due. Perhaps, but I don't think he's going to get it. Austin Butler for Elvis. You know, again, I kind of waffled back and forth between whether Butler or Fraser is going to win it. Obviously, Rami Malek getting the Oscar several years ago for Bohemian Rhapsody would make me think Butler's going to win it. Why I'm ultimately arguing that Fraser will win it is as follows. Because, again, Fraser did win the SAG. I know kind of the Butler momentum kind of kicked off with the Golden Globes, but to that point, I'll say, one, the Golden Globes love being kind of like the trendsetter for new talent. And so they kind of love giving it to, you know, a relative newcomer, at least, or, you know, obviously he's been around the business, you know, since the Nickelodeon days, but, you know, really coming into his own with this role, there's that. I also think there was probably no way that Brendan Fraser was going to win the Golden Globe because it was very clear. He made it very clear that he was not going to get show or going to show up for it if he was nominated due to the whole groping thing. And because of that, I don't think the Golden Globes are going to give that award because they're having their own struggles, you know, with the representation and diversity thing. And they also got pulled off the air for a year. And if they're going to come back on the air, they're going to make sure that the people that they have celebrities on the show to be their winners, and therefore they were going to give it to him. So I think that's the only thing that kind of derailed the Fraser thing to begin with, because that was the night where Farrell and Butler won. But again, much like Ke-Huy Quan, you know, maybe not to the extent of Ke-Huy Quan, but the Fraser narrative has been something we've been following for basically 6 months now, if not longer, in terms of, like, you know, it's the comeback role, you know, anytime, you know, Fraser wins an award, there's an emotional speech. I think we'd be happy to see him win that night, despite whatever your misgivings are about, you know, The Whale as a movie. I think it's, you know, it's an inspiring comeback tale for him, and we're glad to see him here. I would probably say Will should, but I will say if Austin Butler won Best Actor, I would have no complaints because, you know, he is giving it his all in that movie. You know, I just feel exhausted just watching him sweat through all 2 hours and 40 minutes of that movie. You know, it's absolutely incredible. You know, it's a big showy performance. And again, much like I said about in the Best Picture, I would much rather see Austin Butler win an Oscar than Rami Malek, to be perfectly honest, for Bohemian Rhapsody. This is the better version of that music biopic lead performance, if we were to be honest. But ultimately, I think I'll do Will and Should for Brendan Fraser. That's me.
Yeah. Blake, your thoughts here.
Yeah, I'm going to start with Should Win. I, like, if I were to just go on what I liked the most, you know, I would love to see kind of Paul Mescal win this. I know it's not going to happen, but he's kind of one of my favorites out of this. Will win. This is really hard. I mean, if you look at like what's hot, for me, it's Austin Butler. Like he's the one who is sort of like the lead narrative for winning Best Actor. I think Brendan Fraser is going to win. He's my will win. But the problem is Best Actors generally don't win if they're not nominated for Best Picture. And that could go against him. But it's hard to argue anything that Derek has said, where like he's just the comeback kid, you know, like of one of the comeback kids of the year. And people generally love Brendan Fraser. So he's my will win with an asterisk, but I think it's like a 51 to 49, like him over Butler. I don't know who's gonna win. So, but I think Frazier is gonna eke it out because of that SAG win, which I didn't see coming. So.
Man, I'm with you on that back and forth. And I want Brendan Fraser to win. Brendan Fraser is my should win in this category. I think he is his the empathy that you feel towards him is very necessary for that movie to work. And his performance is something that is just like that's the glue that holds it all together for me. And because he is so good, I don't know. I think there's a lot of strength in that performance that you really, really need for that movie to work at all. And he holds it all together. Now my will win. I go back and forth between, you know, thinking Austin Butler, that early momentum is going to carry him to the Oscars, or this victory story of Brendan Fraser coming back. And I think on this podcast, I'm gonna say Brendan Fraser would and should win for The Whale. I think Austin Butler has a great career ahead of him with many opportunities in the future. He does a dynamite performance. A movie I was not super excited about. He helped lock me in. Like the energy of that movie really helped me wash all of the lack of excitement went away right away as I started the movie, because it is just a burst of energy, and he is spectacular in it. So, but I think the story for Brendan Fraser and the strength of his performance is going to lead him to the stage on Oscar night. I hope, I hope, I hope, I hope. Good category though. Really good category. And then our last category in performances would be actress in a leading role. That'd be Cate Blanchett in Tar, Ana de Armas in Blonde, Andrea Riseborough in To Leslie, Michelle Williams, The Fablemans, and Michelle Yeoh in Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. I'll go first because it won't take me very long. I'm Team Michelle Yeoh. Will and should. I think I just think she's fantastic in this movie. I love Cate Blanchett in Tar. I really do. I think she's great. I don't want her to win, and I think the momentum is going to give it to Michelle Yeoh. So yeah, those are my thoughts on that. Whoever wants to talk, go.
All
Or you
right.
go, Derek. I mean, mine is the same for Will and Should. You know, as arguably instantly iconic as Lydia Tarr is, and as Blanchett's performance is, she already has Oscars, and Michelle Yeoh does not have an Oscar. And so I would really like to see Michelle Yeoh win an Oscar. Because, again, you think back to like a year ago, if you were to tell me, like, yeah, Michelle Yeoh and Kyo-Ai Kwan are probably going to win Oscars on Oscar night for this movie, I was like, you've got to be shitting me. But yet we're here and it's very exciting. And it'll just be a very joyous evening if these two get to win. And, you know, you just wouldn't think it. But again, it's a performance where Michelle Yeoh gets to do so much stuff. Obviously, the movie, you know, is geared toward, you know, her martial arts abilities, you know, but she's very funny in it. You know, she gets to do a lot of interesting physical stuff. You know, and it's very, you know, again, very emotional, and just kind of seeing, you know, this, you know, like hardened character, you know, learn to live and love and all that stuff. It's great. I would just be extremely, extremely happy if she got to go away with this Oscar that night. So there you go.
Yeah. Like,
Okay, my should win is Kate Blanchett for Tar. Sorry to, you know, not go 100% on this. Will win. This is really tough. I'm leaning towards Michelle Yeoh. There's just like a few things that are against her. One, like, has a movie ever won 3 acting awards? I don't think a movie's ever won 3 acting awards in the history of the Academy Awards. I could be wrong, but yeah, this would be the first time, because we're presuming that
there are 2 movies that have won 3 acting awards.
Okay.
But it's been a while. The first one is Streetcar Named Desire in 51. Okay. The second is Network in 76.
Okay. So it's pretty rare, and no actress since 2000 has won BAFTA and the Globes and not won the Oscar. So, okay, go ahead, Derek.
I was gonna say I figured this would come up ultimately. I'm like,
sure.
I haven't put much stock in the BAFTA wins this year. I think they've been very much very Eurocentric. You know, in terms of how they rewarded both Banshees and All Quiet on the Western Front.
Yeah.
So I can kind of see why that kind of deviated from it. So that's why I'm willing to say that, that at least from the BAFTA standpoint, that tradition can and probably will be broken this year, but that's just me.
Yeah. So there's that stat as well. Having said all that, I think like we're witnessing like, maybe not a sea change in how things are going to happen at the Oscars going forward, but this is just a very like, this is a monsoon of that's gathering for this movie. So I'm also going to pick that Michelle Yeoh wins, even though this is another like 51-49 split for me. I think it's very, very close. Yeah. But it's so funny like that Cate Blanchett's not even like, she's not even promoting the movie. Like, she's not doing the usual like, stuff to, she's not campaigning for the movie. In fact, a lot of her like award stuff when she wins is she's like, wow, do you guys see how great Michelle Yeoh is? So I also think Michelle Yeoh is gonna win, but it just wouldn't shock me if Cate Blanchett wins another one. I mean, it seems like for decades now, like people have compared her to Katharine Hepburn. And like for decades, people have been saying like she'll have 3 or 4 Oscars just like Katharine Hepburn. So it would not surprise me if Cate Blanchett walked away. But I just, it's hard to like not see everything the wave that this is this movie is creating just swallows up every award possible. So I'm also predicting Michelle Yeoh. Another asterisk on that one too.
I will just say that, just to echo one of Blake's points, Cate Blanchett is our modern Katharine Hepburn because she did play Katharine Hepburn in The Aviator. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Good call. Where do you guys want to go now? I don't necessarily know that we need to cover every single category, but are there categories that you guys particularly want to make sure we discuss and include?
Go ahead, Derek.
I'll do a grab bag of stuff, just looking through my finished ballot here. I do want to comment on animated feature film. I know Pinocchio is going to win it. This will be one of Netflix's wins for the night, but I would love it if either Marcel or Turning Red won, because I probably enjoy those two animated features much more than Pinocchio, and I've gone back to those repeatedly over the course of this past year.
Sure.
Just to kind of give an overview of what I've done. So I have seven Oscars predicted for Everything Everywhere All at Once when all is said and done on Sunday night. I'm giving a picture, director, actress, supporting actor, supporting actress, original screenplay, and editing. So I think that's where it's going to be. But then Elvis is my second best performer of the night, because I think that's where it's that movie is going to rock the technicals. I have it for production design and costumes and makeup at this point. Two of those are nominations from Catherine Martin, Baz's wife, who won both of those categories for both Moulin Rouge and The Great Gatsby. So I think that'll come out in full force. And I think Elvis will probably take the makeup and hairstyling, emphasis on the hairstyling, away from the whale for that. I guess the other things I'll note is we'll touch on original song, because again, these will all be performed during the ceremony. Although I don't think we've heard confirmation that Lady Gaga is performing Hold My Hand yet. I don't know if that's because they're trying to work it through with her Joker 2 schedule, but I believe everything else has been confirmed per performance, even the Diane Warren song that nobody knows about from a movie that nobody knows about. So there's that. I'll put an original score as kind of my ride or die category. That's where I think Babylon can win. That's just a very catchy score. So that's my secret route for that night. And I do think Top Gun will get one Oscar for sound. That's probably it. I don't have it winning song. That's Natu Natu. That's it. But Top Gun will get one Oscar from the evening at the very least. And if it got ex others, that'd be cool too. But I'm keeping my hopes at bay a little bit in my current ballot. So there you go.
What do you see for do you think Avatar is going to take down the visual effects category this year?
I think so. 'Cause for one, I mentioned in my Best Picture speech that the visual effects for Avatar, the rendering of the Na'vi especially, is so dramatically improved from the first movie. We're kind of really getting to that real photorealism type thing, the kind of stuff, kind of quality that you saw from Weta also in like the Planet of the Apes movies as of late. So I think there's that. The problem that hurt, I would love to see Top Gun Maverick do stuff in this case, but what's really hurt this movie in this category is, the marketing campaign for Top Gun Maverick was all very much like, yep, we've got real actors in real cockpits of real F-18s, and we're capturing these shots. And they really tried to downplay the visual effects. And I've seen some interviews with like their VFX supervisor since the Oscars, because they could not talk about their work until they got the nomination. And then talking about like, well, there's actually like 2,200 visual effect shots in this movie, because we're CGIing planes in here. We're doing skin stuff for like the Dark Star, and we're doing all sorts of wizardry for the F-14, because we did not actually have a functional F-14 that we could use on this movie, and things of that. This is again where like the Tom Cruise demands of the marketing campaign and trying to tout it as like, this is all real, this is all real, hurts Top Gun Maverick in that regard for this category. But I would definitely think it would be the second place finisher, behind Avatar nonetheless.
I want to offer some thoughts, but I think maybe I'll pass it over to Blake first if you've got some thoughts on any of the other categories or any of the movies behind those categories.
I really don't, honestly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Well,
you good?
then I'll talk a little bit.
Yeah.
I think for me, what really like affected Top Gun's technical chances as much as anything else is I really thought it was going to get a cinematography
Yep.
nomination.
Yep.
And I think if it would have gotten that cinematography nomination, its cinematography and visual effects hand in hand really would have done something special. I do think that you're battling Avatar, which is just a even from what I have seen of that movie, it's a visual effects just a feast for the eyes. But I think the competition is better, if you also have that cinematography, because those things they're working in tandem with each other to make it as effective as it is. But I think, I think you're probably right there with sound. It's got a pretty good shot at taking that. Although I don't know, All Quiet on the Western Front is pretty great too. I wanted to take a second to talk about documentary feature, because that's always a really interesting category. I've seen a couple of these, and I've started a couple of the other ones, but haven't been able to finish them yet. The only movie I haven't watched at all is A House Made of Splinters, House Made of Splinters. But I really loved Fire of Love. I would like to think that it, just because of my emotional attachment, I'd like to think that it has a pretty good chance. But some of those other documentaries are pretty critically acclaimed, especially All That Breathes and Navalny. Both are coming from very different places, but I think they're pretty good from what I have seen of them so far. They're both pretty good. All That Breathes deals with nature. Navalny deals with the Russian opposition, political opposition to Putin, and it is a crazy story that is just fascinating. But yeah, documentary features are a really good category, and I've got a really special place in my heart for Fire of Love, and I hope it does well. But again, I haven't watched the other ones all the way through yet. I don't feel like I can say much of anything.
I did want to note, yesterday they announced that All That Breathes did get picked up by Criterion.
Yes.
So they do have the TV on demand rights, and they did actually say in the press release yesterday that it will have a physical release through Criterion at a later date. So there you go.
Nice. Excellent. Yeah, it's a good one. It'll be a good, what I've seen of it so far is really good. I want to make sure I get it finished by next week. The screenplay categories are always interesting to talk about. I think original screenplay, it's kind of hard to top Everything Everywhere All at Once, because it is just so unique. And sometimes that bodes really well for a screenplay to be something so interesting and one of a kind. And I think back when the movie ended, when I saw it in theaters in April, that was the one that I was like, I think that's probably where it's gonna sit, and unfortunately that might be it. Yeah, right. But hey, that's just one of its many nominations, and I think it's gonna take that one. Adapted screenplay, I don't know. I probably All Quiet on the Western Front, just because of how many nominations it had total. So walking away with something. Women talking.
WGA, so
yeah, it has a great script. So I would not be disappointed if Women Talking took that, because that way you're rewarding Sarah Pauly in one way or another. And I think this is a good one to give it to give to them, because it's just a really well written movie. I'm going to talk about short film, animated short films. I've seen a bunch of these. The only one I haven't seen is The Boy, The Mole, The Fox, and The Horse. But I have seen all of the other ones. This is a really good category. A lot of these are available to watch on YouTube or Vimeo, or, at the Oscar Shorts presentation, which I think is at Cinemark this week. Is that right, Derek?
Yep. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Awesome.
That's both animated and live action for the price of a single ticket.
Excellent. I thought that My Year of Dicks is really good. It's a really good story of a girl kind of experiencing her sexuality, dealing with like heartbreak and the kind of route she goes to make herself feel better. Really funny. It's split up into five different chapters and talks about five different relationships that she has. A really, really fun one for an animated category that typically is, you know, feels like it's kid oriented. But I think these ones are dealing with some deeper themes. My favorite though in the category is Ice Merchants. It is a, I don't believe there's any dialogue, if I remember correctly. It is just the impact of the visuals. And it is a, it knocked me out. It's a very simple, hand-drawn animation. But I think the concept of it all, you know, if you've ever dealt with loss and the loss of a loved one, there was a lot there that really I was like, oh God, this is good. Yeah, it's a really strong category so far of the ones that I've seen. So animated short film is not a category to sleep on. I've seen, no, I haven't seen most of the documentary shorts, but the Martha Mitchell effect is the one I've enjoyed the most so far. Yeah, I don't know what other ones to talk about. I think, you know, we hit the main ones. I'm kind of with you, Derek. I think the score probably will be Babylon, but I would be lying if I didn't say that I still hum those three notes from All Quiet on the Western Front. Like, yep. I will just walk around the house and I'll go it's the way I live my life now. Yeah, it's going to be exciting to kind of watch, you know, watch where this award show goes and see what ends up taking home the big stuff. Anything else you guys want to talk about as far as the Oscars are concerned and Oscar night or anything like that?
I think I'm good. I mean, like I just kind of tie it all back together. I mean, it's a great crop of movies and I'm genuinely excited to see a lot of the likely winners win for their movies, which is very exciting. You know, it's, you know, kind of like a, you know, a rising tide lifts all nominees. And I think it's just going to be a very fun evening to watch, you know, especially, you know, obviously 2 years ago was just kind of weird, although I did enjoy the Soderberghiness of it all, seeing him just kind of trying to like turn the ceremony on its ear just a little bit and having the excuse to do it because it was the weird COVID year. And you know, last year again was fine for what it was. This year, we'll see where it goes. Hopefully we'll see how the ceremony as a whole fares. You know, I mean, Kimmel, I think is fine, as an Oscar host. I don't know if either of you guys saw the skit they posted online of them redoing the intro scene from Top Gun Maverick with John Hamm and Charles Purnell. Like you weren't even our first choice or our second choice or our 100th choice for a host. It's good stuff. It's a note for note recreation of the briefing scene from Top Gun Maverick. It's great. Nice. But yeah, just looking forward to seeing the wins, the song performances for the most part, I think are going to be very fun. You know, cause again, Not to looking forward to seeing that bring the house down. The Everything Ever All at Once song, that's going to be cool. If Lady Gaga does perform, that's going to be very moving. Rihanna being up on the stage. And then there's the fifth song that I have no idea what it is. But the other four are going to be great. So
Okay. I'm gonna say go on one little tangent here really quickly, and then I will I'll let us wrap things up here. You know, a lot of controversy this year with the campaign for Andrea Riseborough getting nominated for Best Actress, that it was, you know, a kind of a grassroots campaign to get her nominated. Watching that movie, she's fine. You know, a totally solid performance, and I think the campaigning certainly worked to get her in there. Not even the nominee in that category that I would be the most, that I'm the most kind of like, oh, really? This made it. So good for her. But if we're talking about like nomination and campaigns, like this movie, Tell It Like a Woman, and the song Applause, written by Diane Warren, who is a perennial nominee, seems to get nominated all the time, for a movie that I couldn't tell you what it is, I think there are other songs out there that probably, you know, could have taken that spot, and people would have been like, oh yeah, that makes sense. So I feel like she's been doing, there's been some campaigning going on for this movie that might be a little shadier, but I don't know. I don't know. I just, it's a disappointing nomination for me, just because it's a movie that, what is it? Where is this movie? So
I will just say, I will just say that next year, if we want to already make predictions, I did find out when I went to the movie 80 for Brady, that Diane Warren wrote the theme song for that movie, which is performed by, let me read this list off, by Dolly Parton and Cyndi Lauper and Gloria Estefan, Debbie Harry, or sorry, Belinda Carlisle. So we'll see if that happens. At least in that case, that's a movie at least some people have heard of, but it would also be just hilarious to have the words Academy Award nominee 80 for Brady. So 80 for Brady.
Oh boy, probably better than this one. But oh well. Yeah, I think that's a good place to kind of wrap it up. You know, by the time this will be released, you know, there's been a lot of awards discussion, so we'll just add another layer of frosting to this Oscar nominee cake, and I hope you all enjoy it. Derek, where can we find you online?
Yes, you can find me on the Letterboxd over at username DERVDude, that's DervDude. You can find me on the Instagram at DervDude as well. You can find me on the Facebook as well under my actual real life name. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Awesome. Blake, how about you? Where can we find you online?
You can find me on Letterboxd at The Real John G.
Awesome.
We should also mention, since this episode is going to be dropping on Friday, I think we should make a note of, especially for the purposes of our next episode, that Blake has a staff pick at the Sioux Falls State Theater that you can watch on Oscar Sunday before the ceremony. If you want to speak on that real quick, Blake.
Like Derek said, we get staff picks. And I was told to think of three. And I thought for a long time what I wanted to do. And I had like three or four. One was Danny Boyle's Sunshine. Another was Robert Altman's The Long Goodbye. Another one was James Cameron's Terminator 2. But ultimately, I went with Chungking Express, mainly because I don't know. I feel like the other ones, like, they have a decent chance of being played. And I just think, like, I've never seen a Wong Kar-wai movie in the theater. And so, yeah, I picked that. And it's so happening to line up with our series that we're doing. So it's going to be really cool to see one of these in the theater and then talk about it.
Yeah, I'm really excited to get a chance to see this. As of right now, I have my ticket for Thursday's performance, which of course will be have already happened by the time this episode drops. So weather permitting, that's the showing I would probably go to. But if the weather gets bad and things are cleared up by Sunday, it might be one whole day at the state, or go to the state, take a break, come back to the state to hang out for a little bit and watch Women Talking. Oh no, it goes Chungking Express and then Women Talking. So
that's correct. Yeah.
We'll just stay there the whole day then, I guess.
Yeah.
Very cool. I'm really excited to get a chance to see Chungking Express, hopefully on the big screen. You can find Fat Dude Digs Flicks on Facebook, Instagram, Letterboxd, Twitter, even TikTok. Just do a search for Fat Dude Digs Flicks and you will find me there. Subscribe to this podcast, like this podcast, rate and review this podcast, share this podcast with your friends. We really enjoy doing this podcast, but of course, it's always always fun to do that with more listeners. So please share this with people you think would enjoy it. If you do subscribe to the Criterion Break, not only do you get that show, but you also get Let's Talk About, which is an interview show where I am joined by a guest each week, and we talk about their life, their passions, and a movie that has had a particular impact on them. You can subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts, including Apple, Spotify, and Stitcher Radio. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, please send an email to fatdudediggsflicks@gmail.com. You can offer a recommendation. You can say, hey, I'd like to be a guest on your show, and then we'll talk about it and get you on the show. I love getting to chat with new people, and it would be a lot of fun to have some people reach out and get you on the show. If you are in the South Dakota area and would like to talk to more movie-minded people, please join the South Dakota Film Community page.
Group.
I did it again. The South Dakota Film Community group, where you can talk to cool people about movies. It's a lot of fun. Even if you live outside of South Dakota, there's some really good people there. Join in the conversation. That is going to do it for this week's bonus episode of the Criterion Break. Anybody have a goodbye they'd like to say?
I would just like to say that, unlike the Oscars, this episode has come in at well under the 3-hour mark. So kudos to us.
We did it. Yay.
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 You've been listening to the Criterion Break. Thank you for listening to Fat Dude Diggs Flicks.